Welcome to FilterCast, our special edition show on the New York Film Festival. We're here with Jack to discuss some of this year's directors and films.
Well, if we go down the list, I can tell you what directors I know and what directors I don't know.
Sure.
So opening night is Alain René's Wild Grass. It's a film which won a major prize at Cannes. So I think there's been a lot of advance excitement about it. Alain René is one of the most significant post-war French directors, if only for his influence on the history of film. His first three features, Hiroshima Mon Amour, Last Year at Marion Bad, Muriel, were really landmark works. Insofar as they heralded what might be called high modernism's entry into narrative cinema. He was a master of film editing, especially. And towards the end of the 70s or the beginning of the 80s, he moved into a different mode, which was more theatrical, more focused on comedy. There were some stage adaptations that he undertook, and he seems to have remained in this different mode since its onset. I haven't seen the new film, so I don't know whether it fits in with that characterization or not. His last film was, I believe, shot on video and transferred to 35mm, which I think depreciated it, considerably, on a visual level. So I'm hoping that this new film is not shot on video, or if it is, that it'll be shown on video. Maybe that foray into video will be a one shot. This film stars a couple of members of his stock company of recent years, Sabine Azimah and André Dussolier, and it also stars the extraordinary Mathieu Amalric, who's famous for his work with Arnaud Desplechin, especially, but also for his work with other directors such as Olivier Assayas. Emmanuel Devoe was also associated with Desplechin, but has worked with other directors. They're all very fine actors, so that will probably be another bonus element to the film. Now, I have to say I know nothing about the centerpiece selection, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, directed by Lee Daniels. I could hazard the speculation that the arrival of Melissa Anderson and Dennis Lim on the selection committee will push the selections in a more multiculturalist cultural studies direction, and this selection, as well as some of the others, may actually reflect that orientation. But again, I'm just speculating.
They've always had...
Yes, they've always had gestures in that direction, and I think Peña himself is one of the people who tends to be behind such things. I think Ken Jeong tended to be more of a restraining influence and was more focused on what I would consider to be more rigorously aesthetic criteria. And so his departure may signal a shift. into a different direction. And so that would be the first piece of evidence for that speculation. But again, it's anyone's guess, and we'll have to see when the film is screened. Moving on, the closing night film is Pedro Almodovar's Broken Embraces. Almodovar is a favorite of the Film Society, especially under the leadership of Richard Pena, who I think basically was one of the people who discovered Almodovar for American audiences by programming at least one of his early films and new director's new films, and more or less showing almost every Almodovar film at the film festival over the years. I myself have, over the course of Almodovar's career, tended to oscillate in my assessment of him as a director. But in recent years, Dave Kerr has made the argument that Almodovar has continued to refine his abilities as a narrative filmmaker. And I guess I've become more sympathetic to that view with Almodovar's recent films. So I think it is possible that Almodovar is a major director rather than merely a talented and popular one. And so this new film will hopefully offer new evidence. It stars Penelope Cruz, who's now made more than one film with Almodovar, and is emerging as one of his new favorites since he, I guess, reportedly had a falling out with Carmen Maura. And I guess he had also had a relationship with Victoria Abril, but they don't seem to be working together anymore. So she seems to be his new muse. And she is a lovely actress, both a great beauty and very charming. So if one has similar affinities to myself, one looks forward to seeing films with her in them. Now then going to the main slate, we have Lars von Trier's Antichrist. Von Trier is a provocateur, to say the least. He was a kind of wunderkind in world cinema with his early films, Element of Crime. For example, his first theatrical feature, a kind of neo-noir, shot in a very fascinating quasi-expressionistic style. He then had a really extraordinary work which concluded the trilogy that Element of Crime began, which was released as Zentropa, which was a really kind of glorious, visually symphonic film. But subsequently, he took a surprising turn into the dogma style, which he helped inaugurate as one of the founding members of the Dogma Collective, began shooting in video and vowed that he would never go back to 35mm, and shoots with handheld cameras, or was shooting with handheld cameras, and then later adopted a style with multiple cameras. Those films have a very different aesthetic, at least on the surface, than his early works, which had gained him a lot of attention. I have to say, I find him to be a very challenging, provocative filmmaker who clearly is willing to take risks in a way that has few parallels in contemporary cinema. And for that alone, I think he would be worth paying attention to. Of course, I still have my doubts as to what exactly the level of his achievement really is, since more than almost any other contemporary director, he continues to confound expectations and constantly forces me to wonder whether he isn't just a fraud or alternatively one of the most remarkable geniuses in contemporary film. I do have reservations about the use of video. Up till now, he's released all the films shot on video, so far as I know, as transfers into 35mm, onto 35mm. And I personally think that they would be stronger if they had been projected on video, which was not an option made available in theaters, so far as I know. So I haven't looked up to see whether Antichrist is shot on video, but my presumption is that it probably is, and probably will be a transfer to 35. But I guess we'll see. One more word about it is that it's a film which has aroused enormous controversy, like most of his recent films. It apparently has some quite shocking stuff in it, and has polarized critics and audiences. And that's very much in the tradition of the New York Film Festival, I think, which, although it rejected Zentropa rather illegitimately, in my view, has shown several of von Trier's films, and I think tends to want to show the films that really are likely to make noise, at least on the question of controversy, political and aesthetic, etc. The festival continues, the main slate continues with the new film by Jacques Rivette, Around a Small Mountain. Jacques Rivette is one of the founders of the Nouvelle Vague. He was, of course, one of the great critics of Cahiers du Cinéma in the 1950s and later became editor of the magazine in the 60s, replacing Eric Rohmer and moving the magazine into a new direction. This new direction reflected the breadth of Rivette's interests and interviews with Claude Lévi-Strauss, discussions of structuralism, interviews with people like Alain Robbe-Grillet, discussions of the Nouveau Roman, interviews with Roland Barthes, with Pierre Boulez, etc., as well as an interest in more of a political orientation. Rivette went on to become one of the most important directors in the world during this same period. He pioneered a very unusual approach to filmmaking, which involved a collaboration with actors in which it was generally the case that the form was open in the sense that Rivette did not necessarily know what the film would be like, narratively, etc., until it was completed. He has said in interviews that he is very much interested in being surprised in the filmmaking process and broke with the older mode of a carefully constructed script, for example, which would be executed as written, as in the case of his film The Nun, La Religieuse. He decided that this open form was what most interested him about filmmaking and has more or less stuck to that approach and has really become one of the most important living filmmakers. I suppose he has as much a claim as anyone to being the greatest living director right now. And some would even argue the greatest director in the history of film. So
is there anyone that you know that actually puts him as number, you know, any major critics that put him as number one? I mean, I know he's in the top 10 for many critics.
Yeah, I don't know if I can think of a major critic who would make that claim offhand. But there may be some. So I think that's about all I would have to say about this new film, not knowing much about it, but it's always exciting to encounter a new work by Jacques Rivette. So I'm looking forward to that one as much as that of anyone else. And one other bonus is that I think that Rivette has yet to begin shooting in video, unless this film marks a break with that practice. I don't think he has even resorted to digital intermediate. So he's one of the few living directors who retains a connection, a deep connection to the texture of the film medium. And that's another bonus in his work. The next film is, in the main slate, is a documentary called The Art of the Steel, about the Barnes art collection. It's certainly an interesting story, which I've read about in newspapers. The Film Society does have a tendency to select documentaries less for aesthetic motivation, at least by my lights, and more for content. So I'm always a little wary that we're getting the kind of standard documentary form that one might find on PBS with a certain amount of talking heads, etc., not really seeking to explore the nature of cinema itself. But again, it's always possible for there to be an exception, and there have been exceptions in previous festivals. I just don't know anything about this film. The next film listed in the main slate, we're going alphabetically here, is Catherine Breillat's Bluebeard. Breillat is an interesting director. I was not somebody who had a strong connection to her early work. I recall actively disliking some of her early films and walked out of at least one. But at some point in the 90s, she began to seem like a major director. One of the key works, I think, was, for me, was Fat Girl. And the films that followed on that have generally been of a high standard, in my view. And so I now think of her as somebody who I wouldn't miss a film by, and I'm very interested in all her work. She's also unusual insofar as a woman filmmaker, she has been a real pathbreaker, for women anyway, in her approach to sexuality in narrative cinema. She has hired porn actors in order to have X-rated sex acts occur on the screen, has felt that it was very important to show those things rather than fake them, and has been somewhat obsessed with sexuality. It's one of the dominant themes, maybe the dominant theme of her work. But I wouldn't want to reduce her to a content or to themes. She's a refined stylist, refined visual stylist of the cinema, which I think is as much the source of her merits as any thematic or intellectual preoccupations, which can be observed across the body of her work. She herself is certainly a very intelligent woman, a novelist and intellectual. And that's an added dimension. But she has definitely cultivated an approach to the film medium which is not merely literary, unlike that of many other writers who've become directors. The festival typically tries to revive lost films or forgotten films. And this time they've uncovered a Korean film from 1934 called Crossroads of Youth, supposedly the oldest surviving Korean film. I don't think I've ever seen a Korean film from before the late 50s myself. So for that reason alone, I'm very interested. The film is being presented with live visual accompaniment. Live musical accompaniment. It's a silent. And in addition to the live musical accompaniment, there will be a live off-screen narrator known as a pyeonsa in Korean. I take it this is the equivalent of the Japanese denshi. These were narrators in Japanese cinema and presumably in Korean cinema in the silent era who, and even into the early sound era, who spoke during the film and added a different kind of track on the audio level, which embroidered what was being seen before the screen. This phenomenon of the Benshi has aroused considerable theoretical interest because of the work of Noel Birch on Japanese cinema and his book, To the Distant Observer, in which he argued that this represented a kind of proto-Brechtian, modernistic, dimension, which was at odds with the dominant practices of commercial film around the world, and for that reason, politically and aesthetically, unusually interesting. Birch's argument has now, I think, been called into question by other scholars, but the opportunity to see a Benshi...
What's the argument exactly?
Well, the argument is something like that there's a divergence between the visual track and the audio track, that they're not really in sync in the way that classical cinema is theoretically understood to be. The classical cinema has been understood by theorists to be the bourgeois form par excellence in that it hides its, it hides the signifier. It hides the process of signification from the viewer. The editing, for instance, is supposed to be invisible. You're not supposed to notice it. You're just supposed to absorb the story in a kind of uncritical way. At least, that is what the handbooks were presumably fostering. And Birch took an interest in phenomena like the Benchi and the Japanese cinema generally, and argued that there were built into Japanese aesthetics practices which resisted invisibility. And being a Marxist, I think he was very interested in the ways in which this approach to filmmaking could foster political consciousness in viewers, foster critical awareness, shall we say, deconstruct codes, filmmaking codes, the codes of representation, etc., etc. I think, though, that other scholars such as David Bordwell have challenged Birch's characterization effectively. For example, the Benchi, I'm told, actually often spoke in sync with the words mouthed by the actors on the screen who could not be heard. So rather than have a consistently separate track talking over dialogue, say, he would actually speak the dialogue with perfect sync as the actors spoke it. I think this very much contradicts the spirit of Birch's argument. But it'll be interesting to see the Korean equivalent in this presentation of a film I really know nothing about.